everybody. Welcome to Tarot Talk with Shannon and Kathy.
Hello.
Hello. Today on this episode of Tarot Talk, we're going back to our roots. And for those of you who were not around in the first couple of seasons, please join us in this very fun activity that we like to call What the Hell. It's where Kathy and I go out and find absurd stories about ridiculous and or what we feel is stupid criminal behavior. And then we share those stories with you, and we find it terribly amusing. So we hope you do.
Some of them are funny, some of them are disturbing, some of them are quite confusing.
Yeah, it mostly just makes you say, what the hell? I found a lot of disturbing ones that I, you know, was able to set aside for a different episode.
Yeah, but that might be a good episode too, like some of the most more like disturbing ones, right?
Yeah, if we can stand it, if we can tolerate ourselves.
If we can stand it. We can tolerate quite a bit. I mean, you can tolerate me.
Yeah, well, so. There it is. And the dogs, so.
And the dogs.
Right.
By the way, just if we hear some dogs barking, you know, the remoteness.
Yeah, Kathy's at home today, so we don't know whatever's going to happen behind you. Although you did have one of the dogs with you there for a while. So
I have one behind me still.
Okay, so she's sleeping.
But the other two might decide they want to come in at some point or bark.
Fair.
So if you hear that, just know it's like an LA shelter. The cat's in the window, all of that.
Farm.
Yeah.
The Kathy Farm. Okay, cool. You start.
The Kathy Farm. Okay. All right, you ready?
I'm so ready.
Robert Phillips removes his fingerprints, marking him forever. Let's talk about good old Rob here. Robert Phillips left a string of baffling crime scenes for police in the 1940s. This is an old one, clearly, due to his ability to never leave behind fingerprints. Before DNA tests came along and made crimes harder to get away with and prime television infinitely more difficult to enjoy, fingerprinting was the only surefire way to prove that a suspect was actually present at the scene of a crime. So we know that fingerprints are both unique and damn near impossible to remove. But John Dillinger tried using acid to get rid of his in the 1930s and failed completely. So likely, taking special notice of Dillinger's idiotic ploy, career criminal Robert Phillips came up with a much more well-thought-out plan for fingerprint removal in 1941. Phillips simply convinced a doctor to graft skin from his abdomen and surgically sew it where his fingerprints were. Just like that, Phillips went down in history as the only known successful case of someone permanently blanking out their fingerprints. So with that achievement under his belt, there was only one thing left to do. Get back to stealing shit.
Mm.
So Phillips went on a crime spree that left police clueless for a while. So the fingerprints are generally attached to something else that leaves impressions on whatever it touches. That, of course, being a hand or a foot. So while police found no fingerprint evidence, what they did find were several prominent palm prints with anatomically incorrect blanks where the fingerprints should be. So this would end up being vitally important a few weeks later when Phillips was arrested. Shockingly, it seems that a person with no fingerprint sticks out like a non-fingerprinted sore thumb when it comes time to book people into jail. Because I'm sure he's the only one with palm prints and no fingers.
Which is its own fingerprint, right?
That's right. So it's not like there are millions of fingerprintless people walking around out there. So it was pretty much just Philip. So his printless fingers was just as damning as a matching set of prints would have been. And so when the police compared the crime scene palm prints to the palm of the almost brilliant, but not quite, Robert Phillips, they were a perfect match. Phillips was subsequently tried and convicted of several crimes, and the rest of the world's thieves decided to just keep wearing gloves. That said, the screen of Phillips' iPad would be the cleanest in all the land if he were still around today.
Amazing. So I'm going to start out with one that is the Loch Ness Monster Hunter. I don't know if you're aware of this guy, Steve Feltham.
No.
He has dedicated his whole life to solving the mystery of the Loch Ness Monster. He gave up his job in 1991 and sold his home in England to go and live in Scotland in order to search for the Loch Ness Monster. And he's been there for 30 years. So he had the first year he was there, he had his first sighting of an unexplained something underneath the surface that looked sort of like a missile going underneath the surface. And then he's waited 30 years to have another sighting. He's been there the whole time. He actually had a dedication where they named him the Ambassador of the Year at the 2016 Highlands and Islands Tourism Board because he also has been recognized by Guinness Book of World Records for the longest continuous vigil hunting for the Loch Ness Monster. He's continuing efforts 90 years later. That was the first sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. In April of 1933, hotel manageress Aldie MacKay told of seeing a whale-like creature and the loch's water cascading and churning. In an interview years later, Mrs. MacKay said she had seen something black, wet, with the water rolling off of it, moving in a circle, and she described it as a beast to her husband. And legend dates back to the Middle Ages, of course, when Irish monk Saint Columba is said to have encountered a creature in the Ness, a river that flows much like Loch Ness. So, just so you know, Steve is still on the case
Oh my
out in
God.
Scotland for 30 years. My favorite thing about this, honestly, is that it's explaining the mystery of the Loch Ness Monster. Like,
Yes.
guys, there's no Loch Ness Monster.
No, but that gives you a thorough. So this is what we did.
Yeah. We're trying to explain. It's like explaining.
But they took it very
Oh
seriously.
God, I can't even start with that. Let's not. Let's just.
Yeah, I feel like maybe we should recreate that and see if we get into the Guinness Book for doing. Okay.
He got a Guinness Book of World for
Oh boy.
vigilant hunting
Yeah.
of mystery. Yeah, I mean, I think that's important work. Let's quit our
Yeah,
jobs.
there are some days I'd like to do that to hunt Nessie.
Oh, for sure. Okay, on to you.
Two times farts broke the law.
Oh, what?
So here's the first one. Farts that gr that grounded planes. Ready?
Yeah.
Shannon, farts can do all sorts of things, like clearing a room. But in the case of the following story, one forced a plane to land. In 2018, an elderly man's flatulence on a flight from Dubai to Amsterdam caused the airplane to make an emergency stop. So this is awesome. Passengers on the plane were so unhappy with the man's gassiness and asked him to stop, but he refused to do so. I'm not gonna stop farting.
That's the
So the pilot of the plane, the pilot of the plane even directly ordered the man to stop farting, but the request didn't work. So as a result, two passengers who were sitting right next to the elderly man started a fight, which got so out of hand that the pilot was required to make an unscheduled stop. So after the plane landed, the police boarded the aircraft and removed the men who caused the fight, as well as two women who were seated nearby. No arrests were made. And then it follows up by saying farts have disrupted other flights as well. In 2017, an American Airlines flight was evacuated because it smelled like someone made a very foul fart. The smell, however, was determined to be a mechanical failure. And then in 2006, law enforcement was required to bring bomb-sniffing dogs onto a plane due to the smell of burning matches, which were determined to be from a woman who was trying
Okay,
to hide the
so
smell of her farts by lighting a match on
I
the
have a
plane.
few reactions to this. I was trying to keep my mouth shut while you were reading that. But like one of the things everybody knows about flying in a plane is that you can fart loudly and no one can hear you, right? And so that's super dangerous because obviously if you have eaten
Correct.
something,
Correct.
specifically maybe airplane food, that gives you gas. It's a crapshoot, and I do mean the pun intended, whether or not you're going to smell or not. And everyone has let one loose on a plane and taken the crapshoot. My thought process, though, When you have eaten something that makes your farts smelly, has anyone ever been able to stop farting? Like, you can't just tell someone, by the way, your intestinal distress is making me want to kill myself.
Please
and so
stop.
You need to stop farting. And the person could go like, oh, I'm sorry. Let me stop fart. Like,
but do you think that some people just push them out though?
Yeah. I mean, that's entirely possible.
Like, I'm now just going to be obnoxious because you told me to stop.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, the oppositionally defiant, you know, 35-year-old that's still 16.
Elderly farting man.
Or the person that's pissed at you now and is now just going to do it to be a jackass. Absolutely. But at the average person, it's like when you're in intestinal distress from something you've eaten.
No, that's true. Especially with the pressure on the plane. A lot of times it's just air.
It's like fisticuffs, but I also understand how bad that stuff smells. So, like, what's a person to do?
I don't know.
I don't know that I would get violent. Obviously, this didn't happen during COVID, because during COVID we were all wearing masks. And
no, and everybody was fighting about the masks, not about farts.
Yeah, you couldn't smell anything.
You couldn't smell anything. I've one more fart one.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, this one's the fart exorcist lawsuit.
Okay, I can't.
In 2013, a lawyer in Petesti, Romania, sued an Orthodox bishop and four priests because these religious leaders failed to exorcise the flatulent demons from the man's home.
Okay, first of all, of course it's Romania, but go ahead.
Okay. The case arose when the lawyer's home began to stink badly, which the lawyer attributed to very gassy demons. In an effort to remove the smells from his home, the man contacted religious authorities. While the four priests attempted to drive the farting demons from the lawyer's home, their efforts were unsuccessful. Accusing the priests of fraud, the lawyer told the court that after these efforts, he continued to see the demons in the form of animals, including crows. The demons, the lawyer claimed, also turned his TV on and off and continued to make foul smells that gave him headaches. Both the lower Romanian court and the Romanian high court rejected the allegations. As a result, the lawyer took his case to the European Court of Human Rights, which hears cases involving potential violations of various human rights provisions.
The Church of Satan has a new... You're possessed by farts. That's a comedy horror movie waiting to happen. I'm sorry. Or at least as some
demons,
kind of skit.
Demons who fart. Demons. Gassy, very gassy demons.
I can't really. Like, what?
Can you imagine
no.
someone standing in front of a judge? Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. I like the fart duo there. You're like, let me just find ones about farts. Okay. All right. A man wearing an ankle monitor robbed a bank, and he got $754, and he scrawled his demand note on the back of his own birth certificate. Michael Conley Lloyd... 30 years old, reportedly said he robbed a Bank of America in Springfield, Missouri, in order to, quote unquote, prove a point to his girlfriend.
Oh my God.
Not only did he put the note on the back of his birth certificate, but he also did it while wearing a court-ordered ankle monitor bracelet that subsequently confirmed his presence at the scene.
Well, yeah.
So he did plead guilt. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's how it goes. So he pled guilty, which I think was a good way to go with the birth certificate and everything. Authorities said that the note was written in pink highlighter on the back of Lloyd's own birth certificate. Shortly after Lloyd fled the scene in a black Dodge Ram pickup truck, authorities were tipped off by his roommate's boyfriend, who divulged the 30-year-old was behind the recent bank robbery. Police swiftly located Lloyd at a nearby mobile trailer park. He later confessed to robbing the Bank of America. Investigators later learned that Lloyd had been wearing a court-ordered ankle monitor as part of the state's supervised release program, and the device also placed him at the scene of the holdup. So it wasn't just the birth certificate, it was the tracking device on
all the
ankle.
All the things.
Under questioning following the arrest, Lloyd said he orchestrated the ill-planned bank robbery to prove a point to his girlfriend. Lloyd told investigators that he expected to receive prison time and he would take full responsibility for whatever punishment he was to receive. He also told authorities he tossed his birth certificate along with an undisclosed amount of cash out the window of his truck after seeing police lights speeding towards the Springfield Bank as he drove off in the opposite direction.
Oh my God. Well, you know,
what the hell?
He's an idiot. Yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome. That was, we originally started what the hell is because we wanted to find like idiotic crime. So that was like an homage to the old school. What the hell?
that was with the ankle bracelet and the whole thing, because it's just like
idiots.
I mean, clearly this guy's, it has like zero impulse control and judgment or insight.
Correct.
The list goes on. Jesus. Here, this is kind of a throwback to an old school one, I think we do too. This one's called Carjacker Can't Drive Stick. On a sunny March day in Omaha, Nebraska, Melissa Peters was getting ready to take her son to school. She was heading for her car when she found a gun pointing at her face, courtesy of 17-year-old Ganga.
What?
Ganga. His name's Ganga.
Okay.
Ganga.
Okay.
Not kidding. Okay. He had little interest in the mother of or her child, who fled quickly. Instead, he simply entered the vehicle to steal it. There was only one problem. The car had a manual transmission, something with which Ganga Ganga was unfamiliar. What followed was a scene straight out of Mr. Bean, as Ganga turned on the lights and the windshield wipers trying to make his escape. A neighbor called the police. It took them about 8 minutes to arrive and find an empty car sliding gently into the neighbor's yard, knocking over the fence. After several minutes of failing to move the car more than a few yards, Ganga Ganga had decided to make a run for it. Police officers went after him on foot, probably out of a desire to make things fair, and had no problem catching up with him a few blocks away. At least he avoided a weapons charge, as the gun he used turned out to be fake. I love how it's like they probably out of the desire to be fair.
Yeah, right.
The police went on foot.
That's what it was, I'm sure.
That's what it was.
All right, so, oh God, back to Florida.
Okay.
A Florida man pulls out a machete after the bar refuses to let him sing another karaoke song.
I think I saw this one.
No. So, a Florida man is being accused of pulling out a machete after a Brevard County bar. His request to continue singing karaoke at the business was denied. Travis Jordan, 39, was arrested and booked into jail on the breach of peace, disorderly conduct charge from the sheriff's office, according to an arrest affidavit. So after the suspect pulled out the 18-inch machete, a person at the bar encouraged him to peacefully hand it to her, fearing for the safety of others. During the encounter, the bar staff told deputies that everyone started freaking out. Jordan eventually handed over the machete to the woman, who gave it to the bar staff, and then that's when they called law enforcement. But when deputies arrived at the bar, they spoke with Jordan, and Jordan was, quote-unquote, very intoxicated. Shockers. During the conversation, Jordan said he was carrying the concealed weapon because he had been threatened 2 days ago and needed to stay alert in order to protect himself. Deputies said he did not receive any threats while at the bar Sunday and no lawful self-defense reason to pull out the weapon.
Can you imagine? He's like, I was on the list next. He's like, I was going to sing George Michael.
I know, oh right? God. What I'm guessing, because this is what you can imagine, is that
he carries a machete around.
Is that he was very, very drunk and he was singing song after song after song. And the bar finally said, thank you so much for your song stylings. We are very done with you. Please stop and go away. We're cutting you off. And so he pulled a machete because, you know.
But did he just have that in his back pocket?
Apparently he thinks he was going to be harmed. He's in trouble and he needed to carry the weapon to protect himself. And then what happens? We get drunk and our weapon comes out for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
That happens. I have I have two crimes involving food. Here's the first one. Unclothed nacho man arrested for being unclothed eating nachos. Man decided to spend his 23rd birthday running unclothed and covered in nacho cheese, being found guilty of burglary and four other charges for the night. Michael David Mon pleaded guilty to burglary, theft, vandalism, indecent exposure, and public intoxication. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison, but he was allowed supervised probation. If he stays out of trouble for the next 3 years, which he did, all this happened in 2005, the charges were to be completely expunged from his record. A police officer found him the morning after in the parking lot of the pool after Mon had scaled an 8-foot fence and was seen, imagine this, running toward a Jeep with a box of stolen snacks and a container of nacho cheese, which he then poured over himself. He had nacho cheese in his hair, on his face, shoulders, and arms. He reeked of alcohol and was semi-incoherent, according to police.
Well, nacho cheese will do that to you.
It'll do that to you. And then last...
You sure he wasn't farting on a plane with the nacho cheese?
Well, he probably farted from all that nacho cheese. Right? And then lastly, just for a can of soda, ready? And now, mind you, I wish that I could show you all the video that accompanies this, because there is a video, and you can see her collapsing. So earlier this week, I don't know what year this was supposed to be, a couple allegedly trying to use a stolen credit card at a convenience store in Alberta, Canada, wound up in hot water after the clerk caught onto their scam. When the cops showed up, the perps panicked, getting into an insane game of cat and mouse with the police that ended with one of them somehow falling through the ceiling, all because they tried to make off with a free can of soda. This Canadian television news reports, the cameras inside the convenience store captured the entire thing. And honestly, this footage deserves an Oscar. The fiasco started when Richard Parisot shoved his beau, Brittany Burke, into the cop trying to apprehend them, while a shirtless Parisot tangoed with the officer, at one point trying to hurl a bag of sunflower seeds at him. Burke dashed into the back room, climbed a ladder, and started crawling around in the ventilation system like Bruce Willis in Die Hard. Burke makes a few critical mistakes here, you think? Okay, here's this one. Starting with sticking her face directly into a camera on her way into the ceiling. Even if she somehow made it out undetected, she'd still be screwed. She also loses a sneaker while she's scurrying around up there, which is just a huge bummer. Nikes are expensive. But her most egregious error, of course, is misjudging the stability of that ceiling, resulting in an ungodly tumble best viewed in GIF form. And folks, I really wish you could see this, because it is absolutely mortifying. And her adrenaline, once she hits the ground, she bounces up like a basketball and just takes off. And she falls on an aisle of, like, you know, just whatever you would see in a gas station, like an aisle of, like, you know,
yeah,
probably air fresheners and Band-Aids. And oh my God. The video's the best.
Fucking ridiculous, yeah. Man. All right.
Yeah.
I've got a
So there's that.
I've got a couple more and then we will wrap this up.
Okay.
Before I do a couple more, and if you do you have some more or
no, that's it.
Okay, cool. I'll do a couple of more, but before I do that, I just want to mention that Kathy and I will be doing another one of our Case Files episodes in the upcoming weeks, and we will get into the Lori Vallow verdict, and I also happen to know that Shabusiness is back on
in the
news, so we can talk about Shabusiness and maybe there'll be a little bit more news with the Vallow situation. She was found guilty, but there's more to discuss on that, mm-hmm. and we will do that in one of our Case Files episodes. But okay, so back to what the hell. Here's two more, and then we'll be out of here for the day. I just want you to know, that you missed it, Kathy, but if you had been there, you could have spent $10,000 on a set of contacts that saw the Taylor Swift concert.
Wait, what? Can you repeat that one more time?
So there was a fan selling his or her contacts from her eyeballs that saw the Taylor Swift Eras Tour.
Oh my God. Oh no. This is like a Black Mirror episode. All right, go ahead.
And they've got in the article, they've got like a picture of the person with her hand out with the contacts in the hand, and that's the photo for the sale for $10,000. So we all know by now that getting tickets to the Taylor Swift live in concert requires a small fortune. However, for one fan who managed to see a stop on the Taylor Swift Eras Tour, hoped to recoup some of those funds by selling their contacts they wore. So the listing claimed that while the contacts were used because they came out of their eyeballs, they were still in excellent condition. And more than that, they had the divine privilege of seeing Taylor Swift live in the flesh, and you could buy them for 10 grand.
Oh.
So not surprised.
Did he sell them?
I think it's a she, and no. So here's what happened. So perhaps unsurprisingly, it wasn't long before the listing went viral, of course, and people on social media had a variety of reactions. Some of the Swifties were like, I love us so much, we're so unhinged. And then others were like, oh, this is embarrassing and disgusting. And, you know, people get very dramatic about it. And then other people were commenting like, well, I don't know, you know, I don't have a personality other than being the Taylor Swift fan, that kind of stuff. So it was a very humorous. Of course, the listing was taken down because they didn't want, it was supposed to be a joke. It was on Depop. And the person that had listed them did say ultimately, like, it was a big joke. I am a Taylor Swift fan, but this is a joke. But Depop didn't want someone to like accidentally spend 10 grand on like actually do that. So they did take it down.
Oh my God. I'm embarrassed for that person. I don't know if that's brilliant or stupid or egotistic. I don't know, but it.
I think it's just funny.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I mean, they said it was a joke. So
these eyes saw the concert, not even the eyeballs.
Yeah. I know. The very last one is, all of these were given to me along the way by patrons of ours. And we very much thank you for being a patron of the show. And if you would like to become a patron, please go to patreon.com and look us up. And, you know, it's $5 a month or whatever. If you want to just support the show, we really appreciate you. So this last one, Arizona Dairy Queen on the hunt for the missing red spoon statue. The owners of a Dairy Queen, you know, food, right? The owners of a Dairy Queen in Phoenix remain perplexed and slightly amused as to why someone would steal the giant red spoon that adorned their restaurant. We were kind of upset, but then more puzzled, really. What are they going to do with the spoon? I love that we're asking the question, like, why?
We are. Why?
She and her husband, Raman Kalra, say the spoon snatching occurred sometime between late Friday and early Saturday. This is back in March. The 15-foot-tall spoon stood against the side of the building with the handle nestled
15 feet.
Yes. Opening of a roof parapet. Their surveillance camera caught two people appearing to manipulate the screws that held the spoon to a base and then taking off with it on a small motorbike. So I would just like that to sink in for a second. Two people on a motorbike carrying a 15-foot spoon.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just envisioning this.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, just let it
take
sink
a moment,
in.
Folks. Let that sink in.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're getting another spoon made, but it's going to cost $7,000.
Oh, I mean, it's worth it.
I mean,
if you're going to put $7,000 towards anything, let it be that.
The big red spoon at the Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the owners are talking about how, like, we're very sad. You know, people take selfies with this and put it on Instagram. It looks just very incomplete without the
spoon.
Now,
I'll tell you what, if you get the person who went to the Taylor Swift concert in that photo And you combine, now not only has this person seen Taylor Swift, but now has also seen the largest spoon ever made to man that we know of.
Yeah.
Those contacts might go up in price.
I mean, hashtag goals, really, yeah. Because
it's the combo. It's the combo.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that.
It's amazing.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Terror Talk. We hope you enjoy What the Hell as much as we do.
They are fun.
Because we're probably going to do more. If you do, if you listen to this episode, if we get, you know, a lot of people listening, we might do one of these again. We very much enjoy them for ourselves. We hope you do, too. So this has been an episode of Terror Talk. My name is Shannon.
And I'm Kathy. Sleep safe, everyone.